Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
Weekdays from 7.
Welcome back to Game on 2FM. 51552 is the text number. We are going to switch our attention now to GAA because we have an absolutely jam-packed weekend ahead. And to look ahead to it, we're joined in studio now by sports journalist Marie Crowe and on the phone by Shane McGrath, All-Ireland winner with Tip, and Valerie Mulcahy, 10-time All-Ireland winner with Cork, to look ahead to the weekend. Marie, we'll start off, I suppose, just looking at it very generally. History being made in a lot of ways this weekend with the ladies' football in particular, because we have these double headers that we've been waiting for so long.
Yeah, it's a massive weekend for double headers. There's 7 altogether. The big ones, I guess, are probably the ladies' football because there's a lot of focus on them. Dublin are playing Mayo, Donegal are playing Monaghan, and Cork are playing Tipperary. And then there's 4 Camogie as well. But I think it's just such a big weekend for it because there's huge focus now on what it means. And also, I think as well, it's now that it's there and it's happening, it's going to become the norm. And I think that's very important, that this is something that happens all the time, that it's not something that we celebrate, happens every now and again, that it's part of the GAA calendar, that when men and women are playing together. And I think it also brings the GAA family closer together. Like, people who are going off to matches now don't have to make separate plans. Families that are going off to matches don't have to make separate plans to see sons and daughters and brothers and sisters. So I think overall, it's a great move. And I was struck by something today that I read from Samantha Lambert, the Tipperary captain, and she was so excited about it because she's one of the she is one of the players who's going to be playing in one of these double headers. And she said she wishes she was starting her career over again.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I just thought, you know, for players like her and others, you know, it's tough as well. That's only coming now for people.
Yeah, I don't know. Valerie, like, you've got the 10 All-Ireland, so I presume you wouldn't want to go back in time. You're happy enough. But, like, doubleheaders, like, from a player's point of view and, you know, a stadium that's a good bit fuller, it must make a huge difference.
Yeah, I definitely would have loved to experience that. Now, I wouldn't go back just in case you didn't win those. But, you know, I guess growing up, for me, even when I was 12, I got to play with this Skeena Skull. Got to play in Park Cueve, thought that was going to be the way it was, and I never got to play there again, which was a disappointment. But I think it's wonderful now that the women get to experience this. And I think not only, you know, for just playing in the stadium, but the exposure that is attached to having double headers, just the kind of extra buzz and bite around it. I think, you know, we're really looking to keep our players playing the GAA and our women playing ladies football in Camogie. And I think what a better way than to have more bite when it comes to league games rather than just, you know, maybe the All-Ireland final.
Yeah, the only downside, I suppose, you said you there, you played, what age were you when you played in Parky Creeve? 10 or
12?
12, yeah. So I actually thought, like, it won't be there this weekend, obviously, and that's an awful shame because, no. You know, when this was first mooted, there was great excitement at the fact that the ladies footballers would get to go and play there. I couldn't actually believe it when Breed Stack came out and said she'd never played there. I just assumed that, you know, when you've won so many All-Irelands, that at some point you would have played a Munster final in there or something. And obviously now, with the ground the way it is, they're going down to Parky Ween.
Yeah, well, it's very unfortunate that that has happened. And, you know, I don't think it's right that the girls, you know, if the match was ahead, played ahead in Parky Cueve, that, you know, if the conditions were brutal, they'd have a bad experience. So it's better that the pitch view resurfaced and hopefully they will get an opportunity to go in and play. I'm imagining they will. And, you know, Marie's sentiment that, like, once this starts, hopefully it's way forward and it will continue because it benefits everyone. I don't think any team is going to lose any support over it, certainly. So if anything, it's just going to increase for both teams. I think if you think about the Cork situation, the men are low on confidence, low on numbers, low on attendance, low on support. So, you know, if we can all be a community and get behind both teams, I think that'll be wonderful.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Cork footballers now in a minute, but I just want to go to one of the big double headers, the biggest one probably, is Dublin Mayo, right? Men and women. Shane, feel free to contribute. We're not going to sideline you just to the hurling, but I'd love to know Dublin Mayo, for example, in the men, Valerie.
Yeah.
Is this the first big test now for Mayo?
I think it'll be a big test, and the fact it's in Croke Park again. I think Dublin, they have to get a few more points, and I think they've been kind of testing who they, you know, they're looking for new talent, I think, and not bringing in all their established players. So I don't think Dublin have played a full strength team yet. But I think for Mayo, they're doing really well. They're finest. They're top of the league with 6 points, joint with Kerry. So I do think it'll be a good test for them. I think they'll probably relish it. I think, you know, there's a nice buzz around the camp And I think, you know, always Glencoe Park and under lights, I think it's a lovely occasion, and they'll relish that opportunity of playing the All-Ireland champions.
I think you mentioned, Valerie, 6 or 7 new players coming into that Mayo team, right? I want to ask you about hunger, because, you know, not being in the Super 8s last year, having a bit more of a break, a bit more of a longer winter, a bit more time to think about what you might have missed out on last season, is that something that might come into play for Mayo this year?
I think hunger is a massive thing, and you know, peaking at the right time. I think that's what we found with Eamon, that he always was trying to help us to play our best when the Munster final, the big matches, like, when, I suppose every match in the championship is big, but hunger is huge. You know, you can't underestimate it, and when you go out there and play and you have that desire and the passion, and even if you're lacking a little bit of the fitness, you know, hunger will kind of make up for it, because if you desire to get to that ball, you know, the mind can achieve what, or the body can achieve what the mind can conceive. So hunger is a massive thing. I think, you know, when players get opportunities as well, you know, when there's new starters, and if they're in with a settled team, you know, they can gain a lot of confidence from it, and learn each other's style of play, and relish the opportunity, you know. And that's what young players love, that they love taking the chance and playing in the big games. And I think, you know, it's what every player wants to do and wants to be when they get into a squad.
They seem to have really got the mix right, I think, of bringing in new players. They've brought 7 in now for the first who have seen league action for the first time, and then they have all their experienced players. But when you see players like Brian Reap and Kieran Tracy, Phil McDonough, all establishing themselves, you know that there's a good balance there, that there's players there that are surrounding them, that are showing them a way, because it's difficult to win 3 league games on the trot.
And they don't seem to have the fear of that legacy of Omeo and, you know, the Camalia kind of, oh, here we go again, and they can't, you know, finish it on the big day. They seem to be playing with a lot of confidence, almost cockiness.
Well, I suppose James Horan, like, that's a reflection of the good job that he's doing. Like, he's coming in there again, and while there are some young players, there are some older players there as well, and they're going to know that they, with every year that passes, it gets further away, it gets harder, because you get a little bit older and it's harder to win those.
Well, Andy Moran isn't going again for no reason.
That's it, I'm sure. Like, they know what it takes, because they've come so close, and you know, they'll have had so many sleepless nights wondering, like, what if, and they're going to have learned an awful lot, and they know themselves. They can bring a few new players through, players that maybe have had success at underage level, which Mayo have had. They've had good structures. The players will have been on programs, and I think all the work that's been done at underage level now will pay off for them. But like, they've been playing really well. The test against Dublin is going to be really interesting. Like, it's completely unfamiliar territory for Dublin. Like, it's 2012 since they lost more than 2 league games. They're only back training a few weeks. Mayo will have been back training since November. You know, we say it's a rivalry, but it's a one-sided rivalry, because Dublin have been winning all the time. So now is a chance for them, I think, to get that one over on them. And if they can do that, whether it be in league or championship, just to get that win will give them so much confidence. So it's going to be really important for them. And then for Dublin as well, it's going to be important for them, because they don't want to be hanging down towards the end of the table in a year where they're trying to do 5 in a row. They're going to want to have the momentum, keep winning all the time, because that's what they're good at. They're good at winning games and carrying momentum right through to championship. But they've you know, as I said, they're just back. Like, they're only back a few weeks, and they've had a couple of losses now, but they've been without some of their main players. Like, Kieran Kilkenny hasn't been playing, Stephen Cluxton. So they're two really important players for them, and when they come back as well now, that'll be a massive boost for them. That's why I was
asking.
And
you know what was encouraging there for Dublin, if you look at them, they still managed to try and come back against Kerry. They got a good few points down, and they still managed to come back. You know, there's still that fight and bite and that hunger there. Like, that hasn't disappeared, and I don't think anyone will question that. But it is encouraging that even though they're down those few players, that, you know, they still have that mentality of, you know, we're going to win, we're going to try and win. And I know they didn't against Kerry in the end, but, you know, there was that hunger shown there by them.
It is still so rare for them to lose matches. They've only lost 9 league games in 55 under Jim Gavin.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is to do with the squad that they have. Like, imagine the competition for places. Like, in a year where you're going in to try and win 5 in a row, to be part of that starting 15 would just be unbelievable.
Yeah, the Dubs would probably relish it as well, but they've already been beaten by Kerry. So, like, Shane, when you're on a roll like that with a team and then suddenly you take a beating, are you kind of on the lookout to just try and avoid not to let that happen again and get another good beating by another good team?
Yeah, the Dubs having a hope this year, I'd say. They're just they're really looking bad at the moment. I don't know enough about football. The highest level I would have played would be in maybe Junior A in North Tipperary, so that'll tell you the kind of standard I would. But I suppose looking on from the outside at this Dublin team, they just seem to be awesome. They're awesome there when it comes to Croke Park as well. They just know how to play it so well, and I always find it funny when people say that the dimensions of other pitches around the country, like Port Leash and Ennis and these places, are the same as Croke Park, and Valerie will tell you there herself, I'm sure they are, like, but Croke Park just plays bigger, and they just know how to play. They know how to play that pitch no more so than the Clare Hurlers know how to play in Ennis. They know how to utilise every inch of it, and you know, I suppose the only team that's kind of putting it up to them seems to be Mayo. So, like, it'll be hopefully both sets of teams are able to pick as strong as they can. And look, as you said already, it's great for the ladies' football. You know that they're not just getting the one big day in Croke Park being the final. This might actually boost the attendances at the games during the year, at the quarterfinals, the semi-finals, because it's not nice, I suppose, you're looking at the telly at a semi-final game and there's only maybe 400 or 500 people at it, and then you go to the final and there's certainly 43,000. I mean, you'd love to see, and I'm sure Valerie might elaborate on this, maybe you'd love to see the 5,000 or 10,000 people at the semi-final as well, and maybe the exposure you're going to get from the weekend, this might actually help get people out and, you know, get them going to the other matches as well, and not just go to Croke Park. Like, maybe Valerie, what do you think about that? Like, or
absolutely. I was actually at the first doubleheader when the Dublin women were playing Donegal, and I was just like observing how many people were in the stadium before the end of the match, and there was a good crowd actually at the match. There was about 1,000, I'd say, and it filled up a little. Well, not filled up, but I mean, that doubled, I'd say, by the end of the match. There was maybe 2,000. Now, that's a rough estimate, but you know, that's encouraging to see that there is that interest. And I think the fact that just again, the more exposure, the more awareness, it's all helpful. And the standard is very high, and it's a great game of football. And you know, you don't want to be hanging everything on one match. If it's a poor match, then people will be turned off the game. So I think the more that people see, the more they'll be impressed by the high level of athleticism and football skill and the free-flowing type of game that it is.
The only thing is, Marie, like, you might have an opinion on this as well. Like, what you don't want is box ticking and have double headers for the sake of having double headers and having 11 o'clock in the morning throw-ins, you know, just so you can have a match before a 2 o'clock game or whatever. You don't want to get into that situation.
No, and I like, you're going to have to that's going to happen sometimes, especially with games on television, and if they're set in stone, that will happen, because we're going to see that at the weekend, unfortunately, when the Clare Camogie team have to play pretty early. I think it's 11:45. So that's going to be difficult for them. But look, it's kind of, I suppose, the price you have to pay in ways when you're just starting off, when this is something that's new, that's only getting off the ground. But they'll be well prepared anyway. Like, they will prepare as professionally as they can. They'll probably have to get up a little bit earlier, have their breakfast a little bit earlier. But look, like we said, when this becomes the norm, hopefully things will be accommodated a little bit better, and when we're looking at big fixture plans, that they will look at the games that could possibly be double headers and then try and accommodate them.
The Croke Park one, Valerie, like Dublin Mayo and the ladies, is another hugely anticipated tie again.
It is, certainly, and in the last game against Donegal, and the first game Dublin played, they didn't seem to play their strongest team. So like Sinead Goldrick, Sinead O'Hearn, and a few others weren't featured, Noel Healy. So I think they're definitely testing other players out. They're not probably showing their full hands. Maybe they're giving a few of the older girls the rest, like the likes of Sinead O'Hearn. Now, they missed her in the free-taking. I think Dublin would have at least drawn a match against Donegal had they got a free-taker who was reliable. What happened was Niamh McAvoy took the freeze, but she actually got injured. And then there was two or three sharing free-taking, and they weren't going successfully. So, you know, that was one issue that Dublin will have to resolve. But, you know, they brought in Lindsay Davey into the match with about 10 minutes to go, and she definitely added a huge buzz. And I think they were just missing too many leaders that day. So Donegal played exceptionally well as well, but I think Dublin will need to play a bit of a stronger team, although Mayo, as we know, are missing out of, you know, 12 from the squad from last year, and 4 more have actually gone for whatever reason. So they're down a few key players and leaders, the ones who know how to see out a match, the ones who have been there, you know how to deal with the stress and playing in Croke Park and that. So it'll be an interesting match. I'd like to see how many of the key players Dublin will play, because
there's a good few of them on. Like you mentioned, Noel Healy, Sinead Goldrick. I think those leaders that you're talking about are named on the bench, but like you'd fully expect to see them in a doubleheader match in Croke Park. They're going to want to play anyway.
I know. It maybe looks like he's, you know, just taking the league as an opportunity to see younger players, to see how they gel. But the only thing with that is if you play too many younger players, I mean, you need enough older players to kind of help that gel happen. Because, you know, if there's too many new kids on the block coming in, or too many at the time, you're not going to know how each other play. Mm. You're not going to have that unity that's needed. I think that was slightly exposed against Donegal in the defence especially.
How are Cork set up now, Valerie? They're playing Tip at the weekend.
They're playing Tip, yeah. And now Tip have lost their two games.
Yeah, they were under pressure.
So they were. So Tip will need points, but Cork still have the upper hand on Tipperary. Now, Cork were without the Moore Abbey girls who won the All-Ireland, so they're taking a bit of a well-earned rest, I would imagine. So same again, Cork will probably try and get a few new girls in different positions and that. So it'll be exciting, but I imagine they will have the upper hand. Tip only beat Tip by 6 points in the championship. So Tip are a good size, good outfit, have been there. Unfortunately, they got relegated in the championship, which I don't really agree with. But, you know, it'll be another good game.
The Cork male footballers as well, like, could they be playing Division 3 football next season? They're under savage pressure.
Yeah, it nearly looks likely, doesn't it? I mean, they're bottom of the table with 1 point just picked up. I think it's a tall order going and playing Meath, who are joined top of the table. I think just the confidence is so low, and, you know, there's kind of no buzz around Cork. They're kind of forgotten about nearly, and you know, that's not a nice situation to be in for the players. I mean, they're trying their best, but they would want to pick up a few points. And, you know, there is a home venue, so that will hopefully give them a boost. And I'd hope that there would be strong numbers turnout.
And Valerie, I think people are probably neglecting to say as well that they're going through a massive transitional period. In the space of 18 months since that time that they brought me out to extra time, only two players are starting tomorrow, Ian Maguire and Paul Kerrigan. So that's in 18 months, like massive, massive changes. So it's going to take a while for all that to come through and for them to start winning games again. But like as you said, the problem is that if they don't keep winning games, and they're going to end up dropping a division to Division 3.
Yeah, I mean, confidence is a massive thing. And look, if you're not winning, you know, the atmosphere, I suppose no one knows what things are like unless you're in the camp. Like, you know, as much as we can try and predict anything, unless you're in there, you know the mood, and you can suss out how, you know, how the mood is and how people are feeling and that. You don't really know. We're only observing from the outside, but
and
you know,
even as well, like the attention they've been getting, it's been quite difficult because you had the report, you had Corkness, you have everybody looking at them now to see how they're going to react to that report and how they're going to react to everybody talking about them in the media. And, you know, just all the changes, even administration, from an administration point of view, there's been changes. So there's been an awful lot of focus on Cork. And the problem is when that focus is on a county, it tends to fall on the players, even if it shouldn't. And that seems to be the case as well, that we're all talking about how the Cork footballers are going to do.
Yeah, and I think they've lost, as you mentioned earlier, they've lost massive leaders. Like, you know, there isn't the likes of, you know, Alan Quirk and other guys who...
Donegh O'Connor, their presence, Alan O'Connor.
Yeah, the presence alone would cause you to stand up and pay attention, you know. So I think, you know, there's a long road ahead of them, but, you know, they do need to get some points on the board because Division 3 is not where they want to be going.
Okay, thanks very much to Valerie Mulcahy on the football. We're going to switch codes now to hurling. Shane, Valerie mentioned there about peaking early and peaking at the right time or peaking late or whatever the case may be. Can we talk about the hurling now? Limerick, they are still flying high since September. They haven't put the brakes on at all. Do they need to just keep going, or are they peaking too early, or is it a case of no, they need to show now they're not a flash in the pan?
I think the road they're going down, and like the way that John Kiely is saying, look, this is the way we're playing, this is the way we play. If you want to beat us, come and try and beat us, but this is the way we're going to do it. Like, and I suppose the great luxury of it is with any successful team is no matter how many panel members you have to have your top 17, top 20 guys fit. And Limerick, lucky enough, have that. Like, every match they've played, they've had 11 to 12 of their starting 15 from the All-Ireland final last year. Now, that's brilliant to have that. And, like, you just, you know, everyone says, oh, the league is this and that. But the way to use the league is use it as get players used to playing with each other on the field. Like the other teams, like take Tip for example. Tip are we have to make changes all the time at the moment because we just have they have a litany of injuries. Kilkenny are the same between guys away with the club and guys injured and coming back. But the Limerick guys are used to playing with each other and win and breed confidence as well. And you know, people are saying will they be able to keep going? I honestly think this group of Limerick lads will, because number one, they're young. They're on the right side of 26. 27. They're like the average age of 23 last year. Like these guys, they love training. They love the strength and conditioning side of things. The competition is fierce. Like I take one guy for example, Peter Casey. How Peter Casey is not making the Limerick team, I don't know. But that'll tell you the competition that's there. Because who do you drop? You're not dropping Aaron Gillane. He's the in-form hurler in the country at the moment. Seamus Flanagan has to play because of just his physicality. And who do you drop? Do you drop Graham Mulcahy, potential hurler of the year? So I think that Limerick are just saying to people, right, come and beat us if you can, but this is the way we're setting up, this is the way we're playing. And you know what? I think they'll actually get better as the year goes on. It is a long year, but I think this group event are good enough to sustain that that performance level.
Shane, they seem to have an awareness as well, like that this didn't come easy. Like we had to wait a long time to get an All-Ireland. The All-Ireland final was difficult as well. It was touch and go towards the end. They really earned it, and because they had to work so hard to get it, they absolutely know that they have to keep winning and keep going for it.
There was an awareness there. Keane Lynch was unbelievable, the way he spoke about exactly what you're talking about, the maturity.
Yeah, they keep mentioning that in interviews as well. I've noticed they keep talking about how they're not going to let it go, how they're going to keep winning, how they understand how hard it is to win in All-Ireland.
They're playing Cork at the weekend.
And I'm sure Valerie will agree with this. I mean, like, when you're with a group like that, okay, like this group aren't together 1 year or 2 years. This group have been together since school, since probably under 14. They've come through a good development system in Limerick where, you know, the youth development was really, really good. They've been used to doing the gym together. They're used to winning schools, All-Ireland's finals together. They're used to winning, getting to minors, winning under 21s. Like, this group are actually a very, very close group. And I'm sure Valerie will agree. Like, some of her best friends in the world are the girls that she played football with Cork. Like, some of my best friends in the world are the lads that I was lucky enough to have success with a Tip. This group of Limerick lads, they're not just inter-county players who are thrown together. They're actually best friends. And you can see that in the small things they did last year. Like, when the weather was hot there, they all got ice cream cones and they were sitting down having the crack in the Gaelic grounds. And they're close with each other away from the hurling field. And, like, you just cannot beat that, like, that close. That, you know, when the battle is really at its height, that these guys are willing to do whatever it takes for each other to get each other over the line. And I that's why I think they're a great team, that they know when Limerick wins, everybody wins. They're not about individual things. You can see that from the turnovers they get as a team, from the way they work their scores. The man in the best position gets the ball. Paul Kinnork has a huge amount to do with that as well, the way they're playing. And that's why I just think this particular Limerick group are different than the one we've seen for a long, long time in Limerick. And I think that they are going to push on and be serious contenders again this year.
And I think, Shane, as well, you could see that from the way they carried themselves after the All-Ireland. They didn't just win the All-Ireland for themselves. They won it for everyone in the whole county. And what they gave back in those few weeks and months after the All-Ireland, I've never seen anything like it. Just the amount of time, the amount of energy, just the way that they interacted with the community, the way they celebrated with everyone. And I thought they really did their win justice.
Do All-Ireland champions not always do that, though?
No, I think they've probably set a new precedent, Ivan, in that, there was a lot made about the cup not going into a pub and things like that. And I think you're probably going to see that's probably going to be par for the course now, from now on. The way that the Limerick boys, and particularly Don Kiley, he was in charge of this. You know, he's a principal of a school. He knows how to lead things. He's leading people every day of his life. He decided that the cup is not going in to a public house, and we'll have it in our fields and we'll have it in our clubhouses, away from alcohol and all this. And he's probably set a precedent, and I think it's going to be no surprise now that the winners of the All-Ireland this year are going to maybe be asked to do the same thing. But that'll tell you about the group. They all bought into that, and they all went for it. And you know what? We always hear a story here and there. I suppose it's harder and harder not to get away from all the messing with all the phones nowadays. I mean, geez, thank God there wasn't the phones around when we were lucky enough to win in 2010, because I tell you, there would have been a lot more stories. But, like, I mean, it's harder nowadays, and there was no stories back. Everybody had a good time, but it was good, clean fun. And I think that's just the group they are. And you know what? To top it all off, we haven't even talked about it yet. They're serious hurlers. They are serious hurlers. Like, take Aaron Gillane, for example. Like, he's going to be a huge loss at the weekend. I don't think he'll play Sunday because he's playing the Fitzgibbon final tomorrow.
Yeah.
He has scored 123 so far for Limerick. So, like he's averaging 9 points a game for Limerick. I mean, and he's, I know a lot of it's from frees, but he's winning those frees himself. Great chance now maybe for maybe Shane Downing to come on and hit the frees and put a marker down for himself, or as I said, Peter Casey. But you know, Tom Condon has been a revelation there, cornerback. People were saying, should he retire after the All-Ireland final last year? You know, because whatever, but he's been unreal at number two. So they just have someone to come in every line, and that's where I think they're so strong. They have backup on the sideline to come in.
They're playing Cork in the Gaelic grounds at half two. The other games, Dublin, Waterford and Tip Kilkenny as well on Sunday at 2 o'clock. Brian Cody said, I think it was last week, you know, about the fear of relegation isn't there this year, and you know, Kilkenny and Tip sitting in the middle of the table there. They don't need to worry about relegation, but that's a huge rivalry. Shane, you know all about that.
Oh, sure, Ivan, you know yourself. I mean, as like I was told someone during the week, like, I mean, sure, look, you'd scratch your head to think when there was the last really bad hurling match between Tip and Kilkenny. I mean, if it's for a game of Connect Four, I mean, Tip and Kilkenny want to win it so bad. They're both such rivals. It's just, you know, regardless of what's on offer, I mean, okay, they're both on 2 points and they're both similar enough in the scoring difference, and that Tip are on zero basically and Kilkenny are on -3, so they're both very close. But I mean, look, for pride, if nothing else, I think Tipperary really need this. The last 10 times we've met each other in the league, Kilkenny have won 7, Tip have won 2, and there's been 1 draw. So I mean, and the last defeat was a really, really hard one for people, for Tipperary people to take down in Nolan Park in the final. I mean, in years before, Kilkenny probably were the better hurling team than us, but I just think last year we just messed up tactically. We left too much space front to Walter Walsh. We got exploited. TJ gave an exhibition by going out the field and sucking out Paddy Maher. Individually, there was lots of mistakes around the field. So, like, I just think Tip really, really need this win, because I was down in Wexford Park last Sunday, and you know, as hard as they tried to work and everything against Wexford, you know, we didn't get the result. We didn't get the result against Limerick. Kilkenny are coming in the same. They've lost to Clare. They've lost heavily to Limerick. There's a lot more on offer than 2 points, basically. I'm trying to say, Ben, here on
what
Sunday.
Are your thoughts on Eamon O'Shea coming back?
Yeah, I tell you now, I can only see it as a positive. I mean, I think he's a fantastic coach. He would have been a big factor in us winning in 2010. Liam being the manager, but Liam would admit that he was kind of ahead of his time in regards to using space and movement around the field. That's the way he played himself as a player. And look, Tipperary hurling means the world to him. I mean, he's not coming in to take over as coach. Everyone knows that. Darry Egan and Tommy Dunner, they're the coaches. Eamon is coming in to help out, and someone with Eamon's,
what does that mean? It's so intriguing. Like, when I heard he was coming back, like, other counties, you know, they're kind of getting a bit nervous about this maestro coming back to, like, with alongside Liam Sheedy. Like, it's, you know, they're a dynamic duo, the two of them.
And, the thing
and then
is,
it's
well,
like, oh, I'm not going to be a selector. I'm not going to be, what is he going to do? He's galvanising players.
When a team isn't winning, moves like that get scrutinised, and all of a sudden people are wondering, why is this happening? What's going on? And there's just lots of questions asked then, I think, around the move as well. Shane, you probably know, I'm sure you've got some sort of a connection to the camp there. You might know what role he's going to do.
Yeah, I thought I was going to get the phone call now, to be honest, Marie. I thought the band were getting back together. Liam Sheedy was back in, and O'Shea was back in. I thought, this is it. 34 years of age, I'm going to be back in. I'm going to be like Brick Walsh. But no, I think Liam is probably there now, and he was always hoping to get another person in, we'll say, into the backroom team. And I'd say he felt, look at the way the league is going, and I'm sure Eamon had a good think about it. And I'd say, you know, he feels the time is right for him to come in. Now, he's not coming in until the league is over. So it's not as if he's going to be in there now on Sunday barking orders, and lads have to, because that's hard for a player, like, to hear in one voice, two voice, and then now another voice, and you're used to playing a certain system. So when he comes in, it will be for championship mode. So I think it's a great call by Liam bringing him in, because he's going to offer a lot of experience. And you know what? Players like Shamie Callanan love Eamon O'Shea. So if you can get someone like,
see, that's
Eamon
what I'm
O'Shea
afraid of. That's the that's the danger combo. Before you go, Shane, can I ask you about Clare Wexford? I almost forgot about them, but you said you were in Wexford Park last weekend. Prediction on that game?
Yeah, I just think, I'll tell you what Wexford need very, very quickly, Ivan, is Wexford need a free taker, right? And there's two reasons why. They did 3 free takers against Tip last week. Okay, they're obviously not good at scoring frees. Lee Chin took some, Casey took some, Paddy Foley's taking them back to field. You know, I mean, they need to get a free taker. And the reason they need a free taker is because there was a great stat during the week, you've probably all seen it. Clare have given away 126 from frees in 3 games. Now, you compare that to Limerick. Limerick have given away 11 points from frees in 3 games. So if Wexford can get a free taker against Clare on Sunday, they have a chance. Now, do I think they're going to win? No, because the match is on in Fortress Ennis, basically. Okay, and you know, the small stand across the way, the shed as they call it, in the last 10 games there, Clare, I think, have only been beaten once. And that was against Waterford in the league in 2017. So they know how to play there. They know how to win there. Okay, but Wexford are coming down with a fella in charge of them. Davy Fitz will know how to play there as well. But I think the Clare boys love playing in Ennis, and I don't think they get better. So I think that's why Clare are going to win on Sunday, because the match is down in Ennis. Mm. And like, to be honest, I was down in Cork as well. I was doing the radio for Clare v Cork last week. I'd say if you didn't know the score, you thought Clare have to win this match by 10 points because they owned the ball. Tony Kelly scored 6 points from play. John Collins scored 4 points. Ian Galvin scored 3 points from play. They were all over them, but they just couldn't win the match. Why? Because Pat Horgan scored 15 points from frees. So they just have to cut out that. They have to get more discipline in the tackle, or otherwise they're going to be in big trouble going forward later on the year. But I think because the match is on in Ennis, I think Clare are going to win this match on Sunday.
So you're going for a Clare win, and you're going to, did you say Kilkenny win, yeah?
No, didn't say that. No, I think if Tip can get their best players on the field, and I talk about the Cahill Barretts, and talk about Paulie Maher getting back to 7, tidy up midfield, and get Bubbles more involved. I'd love to see Bubbles playing again. He wasn't great last Sunday, but I'd love to see him getting played in a match where it's 15 versus 15. I think he'd be good, and if we can get those guys on the field, I think Tip will win the match on Sunday, and I think it'll be a massive boost for him for the year.
Okay, now just so you know, Valerie wasn't ignoring you, Shane. She was gone. But thanks so much, Shane.
That's okay.
And thanks to Valerie and to Marie Crowe here in studio. We'll take a break.
Game on 2FM.
Weekdays from 7.